You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/kidsandfamily. Just go to Indeed.com/kidsandfamily right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
This podcast is sponsored by Talkspace. You know when you're really stressed or not feeling so great about your life or about yourself? Talking to someone who understands can really help. But who is that person? How do you find them? Where do you even start? Talkspace. Talkspace makes it easy to get the support you need. With Talkspace, you can go online, answer a few questions about your preferences, and be matched with a therapist. And because you'll meet your therapist online, you don't have to take time off work or arrange childcare. You'll meet on your schedule, wherever you feel most at ease. If you're depressed, stressed, struggling with a relationship, or if you want some counseling for you and your partner, or just need a little extra one-on-one support, Talkspace is here for you. Plus, Talkspace works with most major insurers, and most insured members have a $0 copay. No insurance? No problem. Now, get $80 off of your first month with promo code SPACE80 when you go to Talkspace.com. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com. Save $80 with code SPACE80 at Talkspace.com.
Good morning to another episode of Solano Moms Building Community. It's a wonderful morning. It's getting colder and colder. I love the weather. Before I get into the weather, I have a special guest, Nina McGinnis. She's a licensed nurse for Solano County, and I'm so happy you're here, Nina.
Thank you so much for having me.
My pleasure. Nina, as I was speaking about the weather getting colder, winter months coming, the moms and I were talking about sick kids, and I'm sure you know a lot about that, huh?
Yeah, it's something that's just prevalent. It happens whether we want it to or not, right?
Exactly. I love the cold weather, but I'm not looking for those germs coming into my home.
You know, and then kids are so resilient. I think that there's already been a pretty good wave of sickness that's come from kids returning to school, which is very normal. You're coming from almost 3 months off of school, and now all of a sudden you're putting 20 to 30 kids all together in one classroom that come from different environments, different homes, different ways of life. So germs are something that is normal. It happens.
Yes, definitely that is.
And so with winter months coming, the best thing that I can recommend is hand washing and keeping your kids home when they're sick. And kids don't understand, you know, you could be sitting next to somebody with a peanut allergy or an egg allergy or a dairy allergy, and you're sharing, you know, your yogurt or, you know, a cracker that has nuts in it, and you don't know. So the best thing is to just keep all things to yourself.
That's actually one of my questions.
Oh,
you already got into it. My question was, how do you deal with allergies, chronic, you know, sickness with kids? Because obviously the kids, their classmate doesn't know the other person has allergies, and they're trying to be nice to share a snack of theirs. How do you prevent someone not having, you know, people have it to peanut butter and I'm sure other things. How do you do that?
Well, so we, across the board, I know most school districts try to enforce the rule that we don't share things. That's something across the board where my children are in two separate schools. I work at a separate school from them. And across the board, one of the main rules I overhear is that we don't share snacks. We don't share food. We don't share. Like you said, kids want to be kind to each other, but there's a reason for it that's, like I said, kids don't understand. As far as classrooms and party treats, we ask all parents to fill out ARIES, which is a platform that the school uses to put in emergency contact information, medical information, things like that. And there might be different school districts that use different platforms and programs for that, but we ask every year for the parents to update those platforms. Without the parents' communication with the schools, it's really difficult for us to know. And there's sometimes children that have allergies that are new. And those are things that we encounter all the time. So we work closely with children who have peanut allergies, egg allergies, dairy allergies. You have celiac disease, so gluten allergies. So we, as if the parents can communicate that with the school is able to provide so much for the students. So we can have medications at school that are life-saving. We can have more precautions for those students when needed. And then as far as food goes, the schools, districts, usually they have accommodations for children who are, you know, dairy-free, you know, gluten-free, all the things. So, and then most schools are nut-free zones as far as food that comes out.
Oh, I see.
Yeah. So,
and then what was that platform? So for the listeners of Solano County, they know that resource, the platform where they fill out the information for their kids' allergies.
So it's here where we live, it's Aries is what they use. But every year you fill out forms for your children and it's emergency contacts and things like that. If you know your children maybe have a reaction, it might not be life-threatening, maybe it's just a rash or something else, it's good to communicate that with the school so the school can be aware. You would be surprised what thing, like for instance, Play-Doh. Play-Doh can have gluten in it. Play-Doh can have things in it that you don't realize.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, so it just depends who makes
it. So your kid, if they are gluten allergic, they mm-hmm. could have allergic reaction to that?
Yeah, and so a lot of the times the parents that I deal with, they will bring in things for the students. So, you know, we don't want to exclude. It's always, we want children to feel like children. And just because you're allergic to something or just because you have a diagnosis or a disease or whatever it may be, we don't want you to feel secluded from the school or your classroom. So let's say if there's a birthday party and you have a student who has a nut allergy and they decide to bring, I don't know, cupcakes with peanut butter and jelly on top, you know, whatever it may be, or yummy, donuts yes. with peanut butter and jelly on top. The teachers are really great in the district. They work really closely. And so we ask them to communicate with those parents that have those special needs. And those parents can then, that day, knowing that there's a birthday party, provide something that that student can have that's also special, but within their nutritional needs.
I see.
So it is, it's great communication to have with the school, with the teachers. It's whoever's interacting with your child. And it's just, it's good to have that information out. It's the more the better, and the more people that know the better, it's more protection from your child. We all want to be on the same team. We all want to make sure your child is in safe and taken care of when they're not with you, because nobody can do it as good as mama can do it, right?
I agree with you, but I agree. Communication is very important with anything, and educating the people that where our kids are going, mm-hmm. that this is what's going on with them, and helping them in the right way.
Correct. Yeah, no, for sure. And then working with your physician, working, you know, whatever provider you have, whether it's Kaiser, North Bay, Davis Medical, it doesn't matter. Work with your provider. The providers will provide those forms for you for school.
Yeah, actually, that's what we noticed. At one point, my son had like a poison oak. Mm-hmm. And then so we had put a bunch of itch creams in his backpack. The next minute we get a call from the school mm-hmm. that says, no, you cannot just put it in his backpack.
Correct.
We need a note from the doctor, and it has to be in the office, a brand new one in a Ziploc bag. So
correct.
Some of these things that you don't know and you're doing it, you're like, oh.
So that's true. So anything over the counter has to be sealed and brand new that comes to the nurse's office. And reasons for that is because, one, we want to check expiration date. There's sometimes parents that want to send Tylenol that's, you know, expired or things like that. The other thing is that way we can ensure what's in the bottle is actually in the bottle. Because sometimes, you know, we put things in bottles, pills and things like that, and we mix them up, or, you know, whatever system you have at home
yes,
is great for
yes,
at home.
That's
but
true.
At school, we want a foolproof system. And then same with prescription medications, inhalers, things like that. You want the box with a brand new inhaler with the name on it and everything like that, so we know that the student is getting what they need.
And for the inhaler, you have to have a note from the doctor, correct?
Correct, yeah. And then usually that comes with a diagnosis. So asthma is a typical, and it could even be seasonal asthma. It doesn't have to necessarily be this person is an asthmatic. It's hey, between February and June, my kiddo has a hard time breathing with all the new grass and things that are growing, and they need this for that short period of time. That's fine. We're there to provide that support for those students.
Great. And how do you handle an emergency in case a kid has like an asthma attack in the playground? So do they call you first? I just want to know the procedure for myself. Or do they call 911? What happens?
No. So it depends what the emergency is. For an asthma attack, no. They would. So we carry walkies with us at all times. And so normally they're walkied, you know, like emergency, we need a nurse on the playground right away. And so we can get to the playground and assist the student that's needed. If the student, so we have O2 sat monitors so that we can see their oxygen levels and things like that. This is for a licensed nurse. Again, want to reiterate that not all school nurses are trained this way. And if it was an emergency situation and there was, let's say, I believe they're called health clerks. So that would be a parent that was hired to just kind of assist in the nurse's office. The school that I work at, we are all licensed nurses and we're trained to assist in those situations and determine whether 911 needs to be called. If it was a situation where there was a health clerk, they would have to see the situation and make that determination, or administration would make that determination. Does 911 need to be called? A lot of times children panic. So that's a big part of it. It's the adult not panicking and then the student not panicking. So getting to the student saying, okay, you're okay. And a lot of the times it is something that can be remedied with an inhaler. And that would be the first course of action. We have a lot of students that, you know, they've never ran a mile. And so when they go to school and they have to run a mile, it is a little bit of a shock to their system because at home, they don't do those things. And so it's knowing the difference between this is an emergency and this is a student who's never had, who's never been out of breath and is panicking because they don't realize what it is to be short of breath. So
definitely. I mean, we all have those situations. Sometimes you run a mile, you're like, hey, what's going on with me? Am I going to die? But it's like, no, let's just get hydrated, give it 5 minutes and you're back to normal. So it's good that we have someone calm like you, because for sure, if someone comes to me and says, I can't breathe, I will be panicking, calling 911. God knows what I would be doing. So you're in the right job.
Well, and it's okay. 911's there for those situations. And it's, you know, it's better to be safe than sorry is what I always like to say. As far as emergencies with EpiPens and anaphylactic reactions, 911 is always called because you can have and you can need another dose of Epi and you can need a second dose of something else too. And so it's no matter what, if an Epi is given to a student or any emergency medication is given to a student, diabetic, seizure medication, any kind of things like that, 911 is always called as a precautionary and they are ambulanced.
Is this before they call the parents or after? How does the procedure go?
So every student that has a care plan, it's written into their procedures how the parent wants it done. So most of the time it's 911 first and then parent is notified by a secretary or staff that's not in the emergent situation.
I see.
You don't want the nurse to stop what they're doing just to give you a phone call.
Yes.
So usually that's delegated out to somebody else. There are some seizure kiddos that we have that depending on how long the seizure was and the type of seizure that they had, whether the parent says, if it's more than a minute, I want to be called. If it's under, if it's a 30-second seizure, no. And then, so every parent works with the nurses in their district to come up with what the procedure they want to be in. Normally, no, we're not stopping what we're doing if it's an emergency situation to call a parent. We are taking like
the full attention to the child, that 100%. Whatever they need, then the parent.
Yeah, and the parent will be notified. It's not that we don't want to notify them. It's just simply that we are doing life-saving measures in that moment, and that's what the priority
seconds
is.
Matter when it comes to life savings.
Correct. And so, again, the parent is notified at some point, but it is depending on every situation's different, and every emergency situation is different. So
I fully agree. Now, tell me about the common health problems that kids come to your office.
So most of them are, I will say, the number one that I see is stomach aches. or flu-like symptoms. Those are like probably my top two. Stomach aches a lot of times are because students don't eat before they come to school. Now, most schools now offer breakfast and things like that. There are just some students who don't enjoy eating that early in the morning, which is understandable.
Oh, that's my baby.
Yeah, and that's understandable. I have one of my three children doesn't like to eat in the morning, and I like to pack her with a protein shake. And so when she, usually it's that 10, 11 o'clock hour right before lunch that they decide like, I'm dying because I haven't eaten.
I haven't had anything all day.
Yeah. And save then they get hangry.
Yes. Know? Oh, same with my son, the younger one. He doesn't eat. And then when he gets hangry,
yeah,
then it's like chaotic world. Then I have to run, make eggs, do this, do that. Then he's so picky. Is your daughter picky?
It depends. I think that I'm more picky than she is. I really have tried to control the foods that are going into my children's bodies because I see a lot of health issues later in life that I don't want. So like I've removed cereal from my children's diet completely.
Oh yeah, actually I've been reading a lot about the cereals that they have potentially causing cancer. Mm-hmm. And yes, what is that, the chemical that's in it? Now I have to find my phone to Google that.
Yeah, I'm not sure. And for me, a lot of it is the sugars. It's I don't think that you need that much sugar in the morning. So you have to think you're giving them dairy, which also has sugars in it. And then you're also giving them cereal. It's a very sugary breakfast. And what happens is they get this spike and then they get a crash. And a lot of breakfast foods are a lot of carbs. So bagels, muffins, pancakes, waffles.
This podcast is sponsored by Talkspace. You know when you're really stressed or not feeling so great about your life or about yourself? Talking to someone who understands can really help. But who is that person? How do you find them? Where do you even start? Talkspace. Talkspace makes it easy to get the support you need. With Talkspace, you can go online, answer a few questions about your preferences, and be matched with a therapist. And because you'll meet your therapist online, you don't have to take time off work or arrange childcare. You'll meet on your schedule, wherever you feel most at ease. If you're depressed, stressed, struggling with a relationship, or if you want some counseling for you and your partner, or just need a little extra one-on-one support, Talkspace is here for you. Plus, Talkspace works with most major insurers, and most insured members have a $0 copay. No insurance? No problem. Now, get $80 off of your first month with promo code SPACE80 when you go to Talkspace.com. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com. Save $80 with code SPACE80 at Talkspace.com.
It's lots and lots of carbs. And so I, as a parent, have tried to change what I'm giving my children in the morning. I'm okay with giving them a protein shake. I'm trying to encourage fruits, and I'm trying to encourage eggs and things like that that are, I think, more protein-based, which will stabilize them and help them stay fuller longer.
Yes.
Versus spiking them, then having them crash, then spiking them, then having them crash. But again, every household is different. There's no right or wrong. Fed is best, of course.
That's,
I mean, they say that when they're babies. But I truly feel like giving your child something that they'll eat is better than them starving. So if your child will only eat cereal, never will eat anything other than cereal, give the kid cereal. That is, mamas, we already have a hard enough time as it is. We're not going to fight you for every little thing.
Oh, yes. So, choose your battles.
Exactly. Okay. And then, you know, you don't want to send them to school. They're gone for 6 to 7 hours of the day. You don't want to send them starving. And they're not, their little brains need fuel to function. And so there's zero judgment. My kids used to eat tons of cereal. It's just personal choices. And
so based on your being a health professional, you recommend for them to have mornings protein, which consists of eggs, protein bars, and anything else you recommend? Because some parents, this is also educational even for me. Like this is something better to give them in, you know, throughout the day. Anything else and you want to recommend?
Well, I mean, protein, that's my personal choice. I wouldn't say that I'm a nutritionist. I can't say that this is what you should do. But my children at home eat high protein foods. So bacon, eggs, sausages, cheeses, those are high protein foods that will fill your belly and keep you full for longer and sustain you for longer. For snacks at school, I send my kids with those Chomp beef sticks. They're, you know, grass-fed.
Oh, those ones.
Yeah, they don't have any preservatives. And, you know, I try to have them eat as clean as possible. But sometimes my children in the morning, I make my own homemade sourdough at home.
Oh, I know. I always see that.
And so I try to, they can have grass-fed butter with some toast in the morning, and maybe sometimes have avocado on it. That's okay too. There's so many different options other than filling them with sugars and foods with lots of things in them. Fruit's an amazing option. Yes, it has sugar in it, but it's natural sugar.
Yes.
And their bodies are able to metabolize it and digest it better than I think candies, sugars, and, you know, Fruit Loops, you know, or Frosted Flakes,
oh,
or things
definitely
that are high sugar. But again, fed is best.
Yes.
And sending your kids to school with empty stomachs is rough. And so that is something I see a lot in the healthcare office. Kids coming in with upset stomachs. Most of the time it's because they're hungry. And we give them snacks to try to get them through the day. We don't want them to be sent home because of an upset stomach, especially if they're not feverish, they haven't been vomiting. Most of the time it's that. Flu-like symptoms. If you see your child congested, coughing, it's best to keep them home. I know it's hard for us mamas we have busy schedules. We don't want to keep them home sometimes, but that spreads to other children and other immunocompromised children.
Yes. See, this is where my problem as a parent comes. So every time when my two boys come home, they have any symptoms based on, you know, my background of epidemiology. So when they're in the incubation time, I kind of keep them, but sometimes they don't have the fever. I still keep them. But then there comes the problem of the attendance office calling mm-hmm. you have too many absence, mm-hmm. but it's just, you know, a struggle because you want to keep them as a parent and not want to get the teacher and other students sick. But at the same time, it affects their attendance. Is there a trick or tip that you could give me or the other moms about this?
Well, so working closely with your pediatrician, because your pediatrician can write notes for you excusing the absences. You can email them and say, hey, my kiddo doesn't have a fever, but is super congested, low energy, you know, coughing a lot, achy all over. I'm keeping them home. Can you please send me a note to excuse them from school today? And then now the physician is aware. So then if it increases to something more, they can see how many days this has been going on. I always tell moms to use your mom judgment. Even me as a nurse at school, I sent a kiddo home last week, no fever, but their color was not well. Their energy was low. And overall, because I know the student, they did not look like themselves.
I see.
So it doesn't always have to be a fever, but I will say it is. It's a tricky situation as far as attendance goes. And then it's also a slippery slope where children sometimes, like mine, they want to be home. You know, they want to be with me.
Oh, same with mine.
Yeah. And yes. So that's hard. And so it's the district wants them at school. Right? But again, we don't want them there if they're sick. So I think the best thing is to use your mom judgment. Think about how many days it's been. And then, like, if you decide to keep your kid home and they're acting like they normally act, they have the same amount of energy they normally have, and they're just playing video games and watching TV and eating normal, I would say,
send them.
Next day, you're going, you know? And then I will say in the last few years, I will say, since, you know, the big C word, COVID, coughs have seemed to linger longer. So your child can be sick for a week and then feel better, but that cough is still there. I don't expect parents to keep the children home with a cough, because the cough can take up to a month.
Actually,
to go
one
away.
Time when we were sick, it took 30 days.
Yeah.
I'm not kidding you. And then this was during COVID time. We didn't have COVID. So every time we coughed, the whole store looked at us like, okay, get out of here. But it was just a normal cough after, I think back then it was the respiratory mm-hmm. disease. So yeah, the cough is now not an indication to send them home.
No, I will say if they're coughing so bad that they're vomiting, that's for sure. They're going to probably get sent home. I would say if they're coughing up sputum and stuff like that, and it's green and yellow, for sure, try to communicate with your physician. Let them know what's kind of going on. Because they could need some bronchodilators, some kind of medications to open up their airways. Kids sometimes don't know to spit up that stuff that comes up because yes. that's, you know, we teach them not to spit.
Yes.
But unfortunately, them getting that phlegm up and then swallowing it back down, now that's going to upset their tummies because mm-hmm. they're swallowing that phlegm that their body was trying to expel. Now, I will say, if you have a child that is coughing a lot and it's been a while, the best thing I can recommend to parents is to teach your child how to properly cough and how to keep their cough to themselves. So cover your mouth. Wow.
Yes.
Cough into your elbow. Don't cough out to public. If you can, turn your head. And then after you cough, let's wash our hands. Most classrooms have sinks with soap and water in them, and the child can go wash their hands. Now, if it's becoming a disruption to the classroom, that's a whole nother situation between the student and the teacher. But teaching your child, like I said at the beginning, wash your hands, being clean. If you blow your nose, after you blow your nose, you should probably wash your hands because that tissue probably yes. went through. Mm-hmm. Now you have germs on your hand and you're touching a colored pencil that your neighbor's going to touch and,
yes.
you know, so on and so forth. So I think teaching children, not necessarily to be germ phobes, but to be cautious that I'm probably carrying something, I should make sure that I'm overly clean so that I'm not spreading it to my friends because now my friends are going to go down too. So it's not necessarily like if you're perfectly healthy.
Yes, it's so basically educating your children on when they're sick to be careful, wash their hands, and follow that procedure when you're sick.
Yeah, you know, if you sneeze, cover your mouth. I have so many students that like to cough, but they cough outward with no covering and you're like coughing at somebody. I mean, if you ever looked at a black room with when somebody coughs or sneezes, the spray that goes out, it is so much further than you think it does.
Oh, yes.
And those particles and those air, you know, borne droplets, they spread. And you think, oh, they're just a little kid. It's the same force as it would be somebody else. So it's for sure teaching your children just proper protocol and to be cautious of others, I guess. Just be respectful.
I fully agree with that. What do you recommend for hydration? Because most of the time we learned that, at least when I had learned, was hydration is very important in kids. Mm-hmm. Some parents use juices. Some parents use, what is it, the IV drinks that Costco sells, mm-hmm. which I use that. Mm-hmm. And some parents just use water. Mm-hmm. What is your recommendation for how to keep your child hydrated?
I think you can never go wrong with water. I think water is essential for children and adults. I think water does so many more things that people don't realize. It's great for your skin. It's great for your hair. It's great for your organs. It's great for your digestion. It helps your children not be constipated. Water is something across the board that you can do. Now, if you have a child that doesn't like to drink water, I think that that's when sometimes those electrolyte drinks and IV therapies, those things come into play. But I would say encouraging for my children, they like certain water bottles. I will buy the expensive water bottle if it's going to encourage you to drink.
Actually, even myself, if I have a certain cute water bottle, I'm going to drink more. But then if you give me just a plain one, I feel like I don't want to drink water.
And for me,
look at yours.
I like straws. I don't really care much about the cup. I like straws. I don't want to tilt back. And I don't know why. I know that's like a weird, funny thing. But I enjoy straws.
Hey, as long as it gets you to drink, right?
Yeah, but like a regular water bottle with a cap, I'm very unlikely to touch. As long as
you have
a straw. I love straws. And I know that they're not great, you know, with people that do Botox and all the things, you know. They say straws cause more lines, but
Really?
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know that.
But I do enjoy straws. And so like for me, it doesn't matter the cup. I want the straw.
Okay, I will... So note that
if your kids are that way,
and actually my younger one always needs a straw, although he is 5, but he still prefers a straw because I think he feels more I don't know. You can relate to
yeah. Even alcoholic beverages.
Yeah. What, a straw, really?
I love straws. Uh-huh.
Do you have like a bunch of straws in your purse?
No, I usually just get straws everywhere. I do at work in my office.
Like, for my son, I always have each backpack or purse has straws. And then one time I went to a meeting and these all straws came in. At the meeting, they were like, like, why does she have so many straws? But then I had to explain, like, hey, this is for my son. I'm a mom. Mom life, exactly. You can find anything in that person, in that car, for moms.
Mary Poppins back for sure.
Before we close this episode, I want to know, what are the lesser services that nobody knows, or the little things, cool things that you have in your office? Like any stickers?
Oh, yes.
Any cool band-aids?
We do. And I will say that's site dependent. And so like all the fun stuff that we have in our office has been purchased out of our pocket.
Oh, really? Mm-hmm. So it's not paid by the district?
No. The district does provide band-aids, but they're normal band-aids. They provide supplies that we need. They're normal supplies. But we do have some kiddos that struggle with anxiety or going back to class or things like that. And sometimes we can get them back with these extra little things. Now, some schools will give some kind of budget for those things. I've never asked because it's just something that I've provided. So we do. We have stickers. We have fun band-aids. It's not something we advertise. We also have, you know, lice is a thing that happens. You know, you don't. Kids have lice. And so that's something that can happen. One of the best ways to prevent the spread of lice is to have their hair tied up if they have long hair. So we do. We have hair scrunchies. So for students that maybe present with lice, but they didn't bring a hair tie that day, we have hair ties for them.
Those and are you things. Still keep them or do they go
no,
home?
No, they go home with them and they're theirs.
And then what do you do for the... So if they were in that class and they had lice... So did that spread to the other children? Does the classroom has to be sanitized, or what does the procedure go? I'm glad you brought it up. Like, I was going to ask COVID, but I think lice is more in children's than...
Yeah.
How do you do something like that? Like, how do you sanitize it?
So lice is different. So I know people have a misconception of lice. I think people think that lice is something that like... somebody has it and so now all of a sudden I have it. That's not
yes,
how lice,
I think that.
Yeah, that's not how lice works. Okay. So lice, they're little bugs. It's the best way to describe it. They unfortunately they lay eggs in the hair, and then those eggs, you know, that's kind of what makes it itchy. So that little bug would have to jump from that person's head and crawl to another person's head in order for that other person to get lice.
Oh.
So it can, they jump, they do jump, but when we know that there is lice, we, you know, we report it, we try to help the student get it out of their hair the day that we find it. So we do in the nurse's office, we can comb through and get it out. We do send paperwork home for the student to be treated. There are treatment regulations for those students that have to go home. Now, the classroom isn't notified of lice. And
okay.
Yeah, so it's not...
So it's just personalized with that person and their family.
There has to be an outbreak for the classroom to be notified. And so an outbreak consists of multiple people having it within a certain amount of time.
Okay.
So that's not... And we don't disclose that because that's something private to that person. And that would go for anything. Like your son comes to school with a rash... I mean, you don't want the whole classroom knowing that your son has a rash. That's not fair to your son when the rash maybe could have just been from
poison oak
or laundry detergent yes. or something else that maybe is okay for him yes. to be at school.
Yes.
But, you know, we don't, like I said, we don't want to seclude your, these
your
students.
Your confidentiality of the students and their privacy.
Right. HIPAA laws always are in play. And so... we work closely with those families and explain to them there's protocols. So like my daughter loves stuffed animals. Now, if my daughter had lice, I would need to disinfect her whole room. And those stuffed animals actually would need to go in plastic bags sealed off for a certain amount of weeks to almost, it's basically to suffocate those bugs that could potentially be in those stuffed animals living there. So
you can spray them with disinfectant or rubbing alcohol?
No. So they're live animals. And so that's why it's best to like be cautious of what your have children have in their beds. And I personally perform head checks on my children all the time. It's not something that's super duper common. I mean, I see lice cases every year, but it's not, I will say for my three children, they, knock on wood, have never had lice.
Mine never had, but how do you check their hair?
So you can check their hair. So if you see little bugs in their hair, they're actually darker in color. So kids with dark hair like mine would be harder to find. I will say it's harder to find in boys because their hair is usually buzzed or pretty short trimmed. I will say if you see your student or your child or, you know, if you're a parent guardian of somebody and they're itchy, that's one of the main things you can see. They're constantly itching. One of the main areas is the below, like the lower back of their head. That is, and like behind the ears, those are pretty common spots for, you know, lice to want to live and lay eggs. So yeah, I would recommend checking your student if they're itchy. And then if you're unsure, take pictures of their head to your pediatrician and asking questions.
That's a good idea. That's what I would be doing.
Yeah, don't Google
doctor. I would find anything in their head and be like, oh, that's lice, that's lice, that's lice. So I will do that. I'll send a pediatrician.
Yeah. And then, I mean, if you don't know what lice looks like, it's a quick Google search to see what lice looks like. Because lice and ticks are very different. Tick is something that you can remove and then that's the end of it. That's done. But lice is something that's maybe could have laid eggs and then needs to be, it needs a special shampoo treatment and it needs multiple treatments. It's not just something that you can just pull off like a tick and be done with.
Well, that was really informative. I'm sure moms like me are going to find that informative. And from tonight on, I'm checking my boy's hair every night.
Yeah.
Before we say goodbye to you, thank you for a very informative episode. And listeners, if you have any more questions or comments to Nina or for Nina, please go on our message box and message us. Goodbye till next time.
Bye. Thanks for having me.
You're welcome. Bye-bye.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job post seen on other job sites. With Indeed Sponsored Jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/kidsandfamily. Just go to Indeed.com/kidsandfamily right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.